Welcome to Light Bites, an occasional podcast from Leeds Institute for Teaching Excellence at the University of Leeds.
Episodes will be hosted by members of the Light team.
And we'll be showcasing the scholarship of teaching and learning from across the university.
Hello, you're listening to Light Bites. I'm Robert Averies.
And I'm Hayley Bullard.
And we're joined today by Jenny Brady and Mike Kerr to talk about their light research, listening to disabled students for an inclusive curriculum. Great to see you both. How are you both today?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, really good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Perhaps then we could start with some introductions and you could tell listeners what you do at the University of Leeds.
So I'm Jenny Brady and I'm the Inclusive Learning and Teaching Manager. I'm based in Educational Engagement within the Student Success Centre. I've actually got two roles. I'm also the Light Incubator Lead for Inclusive Education and Belonging. So really trying to kind of draw together and create a community of practice around research in that area. And within my Inclusive Learning and Teaching Manager role, I'm trying to embed a culture of inclusive teaching through the curriculum.
Yeah, so I'm Mike Kerr. I'm a resident doctor now in the NHS, but previously when I was working on this project, I was a medical student here at Leeds. I also was employed as a research assistant at Light, and I formed a wonderful relationship now with Jenny over the years, but I was particularly invested in this project because of my own lived experiences and intersectionality with disabilities and other things. So I'm quite passionate about helping students with some of those lived experiences.
Fantastic. Perhaps you could give listeners a sense of what motivated you both to get into this research to begin with.
So a number of years ago, I worked in disability services. Well, I worked in disability services as a disability practitioner for about 14 years. And that gave me the passion really to try to change the culture around inclusive teaching, because I was making the same recommendations for reasonable adjustments again and again and again, but nothing was really happening to change that in terms of how teaching was designed and delivered. So I got the opportunity in 2019 to actually join the core team of Light to carry out a research project across the whole institution to understand the extent to which we were delivering or not an inclusive experience for our students. And that was related to the university's baseline standards for inclusive learning and teaching, which had been agreed in 2018. Now, one of the recommendations from that research was that we really needed to understand the experiences of disabled students more, because there were so many recommendations for ways in which we were not yet really kind of being inclusive enough. It was a case to say, where do we actually start and what would disabled students want us to prioritise? And that's where I got the idea for this research project to involve Mike in this research.
Yeah, as I mentioned previously, for me, I learned through different experiences on different projects with Light that I really enjoyed research. So I was equipped with some skills already. And then being a doctor anyway, it's all about lifelong research and engaging with research and different types of research methodologies. For me, there was a personal draw towards this project, as I say, because of like different intersectionalities of students and different lived experiences. So in particular, the most relevant for this for me, so I have disabilities, so I have a connective tissue disease for people that are listening to that. And they don't know what that is. So that's an autoimmune disease that can affect me systemically. So like tiredness, fatigue, mobility issues, joint pain, joint swelling, all those types of things. And then in addition to that, I also have complex PTSD. So there was my own experiences. And then I've got lots of friends that have experience with disabilities too. So I was just really drawn to this project and I was quite eager keen to learn from Jenny and all of her experience.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why we really wanted to bring Mike into this project was because we felt that actually having Mike interviewing and speaking with other disabled students would really help to bring out the best in those students, because they could relate to a fellow student who also understood the experience of being disabled. So that was really kind of key to the research design here.
Fantastic, and a lovely segue into the next question, which I'll hand over to Hayley for.
So could you give listeners an overview of the research design, so how you went about it? Did it all go to plan, or did plans change over time?
I'm not necessarily sure anybody can say that research goes to plan. So I think if you ask anybody that question, they would say it did not go to plan, but I think that's normal. That's the word is iterative, isn't it? It's a very iterative process, and you learn as you go. You go in with an idea and that changes. The research design for this, as Jenny says, is so that we did 30-minute interviews with 10 students, and they were conducted by me, and they were semi-structured interviews. So I kind of went in there thinking about the types of questions that we wanted to ask them, but then we followed on and were very much led by the students to explore those, the kind of feelings and the questions that they brought. And then we took that data and used Bron and Clark's thematic analysis. We went over it once, and we had hundreds and hundreds of codes, and we went for a very long time. And then we sought some advice from another colleague and to get some feedback on the stuff that we'd done. And then we realised that actually the most appropriate thing to do was to, when we reviewed those codes, was to make them more person-centred, so I statements, me statements, to really have that punch, to really draw on what the lived experiences of what students were. And then we took those, assembled them into themes, and then we were able to identify recommendations from that. I think the only thing that I would say is that, as Jenny was saying when she designed this project, it was what do we do now? What do we do next? And I think we realised as we were doing the codes that actually ended up turning into a system-wide review, didn't it? It ended up becoming a massive project. That was my experience of it, from kind of what I'm not sure what your thoughts are now.
Yeah.
But it started off probably in your head a bit smaller than what it really turned out, didn't it?
Yeah. I didn't anticipate that we would be spending days and days together poring over this Excel spreadsheet, and
what's that supposed to mean?
But we were just adding things into this spreadsheet. But it was intense. It was really intense because we were feeling everything that we were reading, weren't we? And kind of then categorizing it. But yeah, it was. It was a really intense few days.
I think that's a really important point as well, because it's particularly when you do research on topics like this that you're aware can be quite emotive or sensitive. There were just days, weren't there, where we just paused and we literally I don't mind saying I was crying reading the quotes. And actually I think when you go into research, you have an idea of how you're going to do it and what the process will look like, but when you do research topics like this, they're very emotionally intensive, aren't they?
Yeah, there were tears. And actually, drawing on my own experience of being a disability practitioner, I thought that I'd had every conversation that I needed to have to understand the experiences of disabled students. I thought disabled students were opening up to me in that capacity. But no, there was an extra layer that would have never been revealed to me had it not been for this research. So I'm really, really grateful for having learned the value of research through this process. Mm.
Again, that's another nice segue into the next question, really. So what did you learn and what were the main findings of your research?
I think for me, when I was in that disability practitioner role, it used to frustrate me that students weren't going to their module leaders, or you know, or to their teaching staff, to let them know that particular adjustments that they had expected to be in place actually weren't in place. They weren't doing that, but they were coming to me instead, and I was getting frustrated. Think, well, why do I always have to be the middle person? Like, this is not efficient. But through this research, I really realised that there are micro decisions that our disabled students are making every day about whether or not that request will be met positively. And I don't mean that that they fear that staff won't put the adjustment in place, but I think sometimes if there's an overreaction of sympathy, then that is actually unwanted from the student's perspective, because they don't want to make a fuss. They don't want to be a burden. They don't want to tell somebody something that they perhaps should have already known, but perhaps they were too busy to, you know, look at the paperwork or whatever there. So sometimes what came through was that students were holding themselves back from actually asking for the thing that they needed, just to kind of save their dignity and to kind of, you know, to kind of smooth the path. Mm-hmm. So by helping someone else, they were actually hurting themselves. So that all of these micro decisions, and then also the main thing, another thing was that they were risking the extra effort and the energy that goes into kind of just the admin around being a disabled student and getting your support set up actually can put a student's health further at risk, or mental health or physical health. So they were two of the things. What else was there for you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think the, as I say, it ended up becoming like where we started. It ended up becoming almost like an institutional review from that's kind of where it ended up. And we split it down with the themes of on three different levels. So it was person-centered was theme one, classroom type level, so more of a group type setting. And then the third theme was all about as an institution. So you can see kind of how that we went from person, group, institution. The thing that really came through in theme one was that the repetitive disclosure from students, because the system was experienced as quite inefficient by students overall, that was just incredibly jarring for them. And as Jenny says, that they would just they would resent having to repeatedly disclose to the point where they wouldn't, because discussing your own disability, everybody has different experiences, at least in mind, that disclosing it, they're always, there's that feeling of perhaps shame. Am I going to be judged by the recipient of this conversation? And I think a lot of students feel that having disclosed it once, which, you know, can bring all those feelings of shame and that come up, that to have to repeatedly do that, actually that is incredibly jarring for somebody to do that. And then on a classroom type level, the types of things that came up were about the teaching wasn't designed in a way that was fully inclusive for them. And one of the calls was like, reasonable adjustments don't work for me. I think that was one of the sub themes. And just about the different types of teaching, but that led on to quite lengthy discussions with us, because ultimately, is it really possible to design teaching that truly is inclusive for everybody? Because I think what we were saying is that we can be inclusive, but I guess not everybody will always be happy, because ultimately, what works for me might not work for you, Hayley. And I think what that was a long discussion between me and Jenny, like, where's the happy medium so we can try and cater for everybody? But I think that can often be difficult to achieve. And then systemically, it was looking at all the different aspects of a student. So looking at the way that systems work in the University of Leeds, so whether that be reasonable adjustments or disclosing things. And actually, some students came from widening participation backgrounds. They were single parents, working class backgrounds, and they often found that the struggles that they were having inside the university as a disabled student, that the other intersectionalities of the student, they compounded those difficulties. So those were kind of the key things that I took away. There's some really great theme maps that we've done. But I think ultimately, with all the data that we had, there was so much. It's often difficult to look at it, and so, as I say, it ended up becoming like an institution review. It's difficult to look at that and say, okay, where do we go now?
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, well, this is this and this and this, and it's really difficult to.
Yeah. You know,
systems can take a while to change, like a long time.
I think one thing that I would dig into further is that finding around students who had physical disabilities were more likely to have their needs met than if they had an invisible disability, so let's say a specific learning difference or a mental health condition. And so, and I think one of our participants had both of those and so was able to see that from both perspectives. And I think, you know, there was certainly a sense that students recognised if teaching had been delivered or designed in a different way, in a kind of more inclusive way to start with, then it would benefit not just them, but other students, their fellow students and their peers, and that would have a huge impact on their sense of belonging, because it was just that sense of kind of feeling different and knowing that you're different and knowing that your needs may not have been catered for or thought about when you enter this environment again and again and again. Yeah, quite difficult to listen to.
For sure, yeah. And then in the in the classroom setting, feelings of belonging came up quite a lot. And I know that's an area that's had quite a significant amount of research in recent years. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense. If you feel other or different, those feelings of not belonging can definitely be compounded. And the other thing to say is that, see, that there were students, I guess it's an obvious answer, but on that note, students described really quite strong positive feelings and good academic outcomes when they felt more included and they felt that they had a sense of belonging in the university. So in settings like that, they discussed that their academic outcomes or grades were better when they were made to feel more included.
And that's a really important point, because it's highlighting that context-specific dynamic that's happening.
I should point out to listeners at this stage that you can access this report online, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes. On that, before we get to the next section, you were mentioning a minute ago about how the sample of students that you recruited, and you talk a bit about in the report how that can say some things, but you'd like to, you know, that wider sample would provide more in-depth insights. But you do talk about how there is a correlation between your findings and national data. And I wonder if that's something you'd like to talk about a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the last few years, there's been a sector-wide Disabled Students Insights Survey. So it's the Access and Insights Report. And there was one in 2023 and one in 2024. And there'll be another one. So the survey's been out this year. And actually, the 2023 and the 2024 report absolutely tie in with what we've found here. So it almost, you know, it's great that we have some data that relates to our own context and to our and helps us to helps to kind of bring some colour and bring it to life about what our own drive and priorities needs to be. But this is a sector-wide picture. It's a sector-wide issue. You know, all of the stuff around kind of information sharing, the bureaucracy around the disabled students' allowances, the culture around inclusive teaching and inclusive assessment. There's a lot of work that we need to do as a sector to really kind of change practice and move away from this knowledge sitting with disability practitioners and disability services. And actually, if we really think about that social model of disability, trying to get that awareness into actually not just our staff who teach and our educators, but to everyone who has, you know, any kind of role within the institution needs to understand the concept of disability and how they, within their roles, can affect that experience of disablement for people that experience barriers.
And on that, what sorts of changes do you feel should be prioritised going forwards, whether that's at Leeds or, as you say, more widely?
I think training around disability is absolutely crucial. So, you know, to help people to gain that mindset and even understanding what the word disability actually means, because, you know, people shy away from it, but actually it's a helpful word when we understand that it really is about the context and the person's experience within that context. So I think that that's one key thing. And then, you know, the kind of the systems of information sharing are absolutely broken and have been broken for a long time. But that needs to be, you know, institutionally, we need investment in a system that actually works, whereby our educators can get access to the information that they need. Because actually, if we're able to effectively scale up on our inclusive practice, we would reduce the requirement for so many reasonable adjustments, and then we would be able to prioritise the adjustments that are needed for students with more complex disabilities or sensory impairments. So there are a few shifts that are needed to actually, you know, help everybody to get the information that they need and to get the right environments in place for people just to thrive and feel that they belong.
And you talk about in the report about how this training ought to be rooted in the social model of disability.
Yeah.
So focused on hidden disabilities and intersectionality.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what I was just about to pick up on. Yeah, so it's about looking at disabled students holistically and more as a whole person rather than exclusively like all of the medical aspects, as it were, of what one particular disability might mean. It's looking at like, how does this impact this person as a human being? Like, what are the other factors of this person's life as well that may make their disability more complex? I think as well, just thinking about it's worth just mentioning that obviously the data was incredibly rich in this, and there was a lot to sift through. And as Jenny says, these were backed up by the other work that's been going on, but I think more still perhaps needs to be done, as always in research. Like, this was with 10 students, which was out of a student sample potentially of thousands. You can very much argue that perhaps might not be entirely representative. The only other aspect, which I guess might be like a limitation of this study, is the fact that, like, when you think about response bias, so often it's like, you know, if you go to the supermarket, for example, and your experience wasn't great, you're more likely to then contact somebody and say, okay, this is a problem. So when this was advertised to students, essentially what I'm saying with the response bias is that there's a chance that, you know, people who have very strong feelings, whether they be positive or negative, may be more likely to have engaged with this research. That's the other thing. But I think the in terms of the recommendations, I think the thing that stood out most to me was thinking about just designing systems that are compassionate towards students. I think that's really, really, really important, because the thing that repeatedly came through was about the reasonable adjustment system and the way that it makes students feel having to repeatedly disclose those things. So thinking about how can we design those systems, so changes moving forward that I would like to see anyway off the back of this would be thinking about how can we make that more compassionate with students, because ultimately that's who this is for. All systems should be designed with the student in mind and what their experience will be using that system. And Jenny's already picked up on teaching. And then I guess finally, as I said, with the intersectionality aspect, it's about really just looking at this person rather than just this is the new system that we're going to implement, looking at how that's going to integrate in the university, and just looking at that person as a whole human being and thinking about what the rest of their student experience would be like.
Maybe this is partly the kind of stuff that I like reading about as well, but and being involved with, but this work seems to be a part of and an important part of wider discussions around compassionate approaches to higher education, as you were saying, Mike. There are lots of kind of emerging concepts, ways of looking at higher education, whether that's in teaching, whether it's in wider design of structures in higher education. Our student education conference keynote spoke about this in terms of the ecological university. And I think that's a really interesting example of how we can look, as you say, Mike, holistically at students as human beings, and how we can consider all different facets of what it means to be involved in higher education and to learn and to be learning alongside other people. And I'd be really excited to see where this goes going forwards. I guess that leads on to outputs you've produced. I mean, just this conversation and hearing your like reflections is an amazing thing to be a part of. And also I've mentioned the article that people can engage with if they want like a summary of the findings and the methodology, and I guess practical guidance on how it might, you know, inform their people's work, whether that's, again, in teaching or wider student education practice.
My plea would really be to engage with all of the resources that we have around inclusive learning and teaching. So there's a SharePoint site dedicated to inclusivity and accessibility, and it covers everything from kind of digital accessibility to inclusive assessment to resources around belonging and hidden curriculum. And there are a lot of small tweaks that people can make to really improve the experiences of disabled students. And what I'm trying to do within my work is trying to get some kind of consistency, really, because that will then enable our disability services to start scaling back on making the recommendations for reasonable adjustments, which should actually just be there as standard. But they can't scale back on those recommendations until they know that there is a level of quality, because otherwise that's just not fair on students to say, oh, yeah, well, we think that it should be, you know, inclusive when you go in onto this module or this program. But if we don't actually know that, then that feels a little bit negligent, really. So we've got to get to a point where we can understand the quality of our inclusive provision.
Yeah, we've done some amazing stuff with this already. Obviously, as you say, like this podcast, it's been summarised in the article that is online. We've presented it at a few conferences, including an international one. We went to Utrecht, to Isotel. That was an amazing experience. That was wonderful to be able to present this work in such a huge, like at such a huge conference. Like, that was incredible. So we've done some really exciting dissemination with this already, and then this is still ongoing with the online stuff. And then for me, so I'm in the process with Jenny of just getting this all written up to get it put in out for publication next.
Luck.
Yeah, so that'll be the next steps that'll be happening over the next few months. And then I think for me, I was just reflecting as Jenny was speaking as well. I think, I've, at least from my experience, it's fair to, I feel like I've learned so much from you over the last few years. And yeah, it was a joy to work with you on this. It was really lovely, and you taught me so much. And, you know, coming from, I think, looking at research from a very typical, like, medical way, like, this is how we're going to do this, and listening to and learning from Jenny's experiences from disability and professional services, like, I've learned so much. And I think, there are some findings in here that can feel, be quite sad to read, but I think, you know, like, you've consistently said that, you know, if you ask anybody that goes into higher education, like, they really care about the students. Yeah. and you know, people who work in professional services, they really do care about getting this right. And I think the point that we're trying to make is that it's finding a system that works for students and a system that works for staff, and to be able to deliver that. And coming to university, you know, it's a privilege, you know, it's such a wonderful experience. And I think, at least from my experiences when I was going through medical school, because it's quite a long time, university, you know, it's a place where we should value and celebrate everybody and all the intersectionality that and all the different aspects of that person brings. And it's about, I think the university needs to think about how can we really celebrate our students and prepare them, because ultimately for most people the whole point of getting a degree, you know, is you're going to go on to professional life of some sort. So preparing disabled students and really universities embodying values of compassion that then students, you know, can then take as professionals out into the working world.
Yeah, I agree. Kind of empowering all students to kind of bring their full selves both into their courses and outwards into their, you know, into life beyond university. So, yeah, and I'll just echo what Mike said about, you know, enjoying the process of working together. I've learned a lot and I'm really grateful for having had the opportunity, really grateful. And also, you know, this is just a kind of shout out to anyone who is kind of technical or professional services who doesn't have any kind of experience in carrying out research or thinks that this is perhaps not for them. I think if you have a passion and an interest in something, it absolutely is for you. There are so many people that can help you and steer you. And like Mike was saying earlier, you know, we started taking an approach and then we thought, okay, who can we check in with about this? And so we asked somebody else who had a lot more experience and they gave us a steer. And, you know, it was brilliant. We're here as a community. You know, we need to be here to help each other. So don't be afraid if you have a passion or an interest in something. And particularly if, like me, you've been working on in an area for a long time and you think that you know everything that there is to know and you actually don't because you haven't looked at it from other angles. Mm.
I think this relates to what you were saying, Mike, about seeing ourselves holistically.
Yeah, I mean, I think pragmatically, it's very difficult to make any system in any context that is perfect. You know, perfect is an unreasonable expectation, you know, and that's in any sector, any context. However, you know, in terms of the outputs that you've come back to, and when we're looking at university, all students should feel that they are... that they feel included and that they belong and that the university is a safe space for them. And that should be at the heart of any changes that come into a university system. I think that's kind of where I...
Great. So what next for you on the podcast?
So I am a full-time resident doctor now in the NHS. So my life is pretty busy, but I'm engaged in other research too. For me, next steps, as I say, will be to get this published. I think it's really important. So much blood, sweat, and tears went into this, didn't it? That it would be a real shame and a travesty, to be honest, to not use that rich data and get it out into a publication. And the response that we've had already from conferences and things like that has been really positive. So next steps in terms of, for me, in the immediate future, to get this published over the coming months. Sadly now, as I've left the University of Leeds, I will no longer be working with Jenny, but I've been very lucky to have formed a really great relationship with Jenny. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what comes for you next.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I mean, for me, I'm just continuing on my mission to, you know, make the university as inclusive as possible. And I think what I really like about this is I always thought, well, I remember when we were in the depths of analysing the quotes and thinking this is really, really hard. But I thought we are creating a really shiny diamond from this. Like we're polishing it and polishing it and we're really, really, you know, firming something up. And I think, you know, what I'd really like to come from this is just a piece of work that really helps to shift people's emotional understanding of the experience of disability. So I think however we take that forward, I think that has to be at the core of it.
Jenny, are you in a position to share details of the Inclusive Education and Belonging Incubator event in September?
Yes. So I'm in the stages of planning an event which really is around kind of building our own community. So we've already, on our incubator channel, we already have around 90 members. So these are people that are currently active or are thinking about carrying out research in the area of inclusive education and belonging. And we're also kind of constantly calling out for new members to join us. And what we're going to do with that event, which we've scheduled in for the 24th of September, we're going to have an opportunity for people to meet with each other along particular themes that they've already indicated that they're interested in. Start establishing those relationships, and then we're going to hear from some of our current Light Fellows around their projects and how they kind of collaborate together and how that works, and something about the process of applying for fellowships there. We're going to hear from our strategic leads around how they can help with kind of inclusive research design. And then importantly, we're going to have a design thinking element to the day where we can co-create our own kind of community of practice ethos, because I'm really passionate that we create spaces where we can bring our full selves into our collaboration, how we work together, how we kind of bounce off each other, give each other peer feedback without those hierarchies. Because I've heard from so many people feeling like they have imposter syndrome. And I think, well, if everybody has imposter syndrome, who is actually the right person to be here? You know, everybody feels like they're not enough in some way. But to me, that's the whole point of having a community. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm really looking forward to what relationships come out of this and what new ideas are sparked. Great.
So sign up to the Light community, the incubator channel,
yep.
Light newsletter, all that stuff.
Yep.
So moving on to the final question then. So it sounds like you've developed quite a good partnership while you're doing this research project, and it's been a bit of an emotional experience at times. So thinking about other people that might be venturing onto doing their own SOTL projects, pedagogical research projects, have you got any advice for those people, or is there something you would do differently?
That's a very good question.
Best or last?
Yeah. I think the only thing that I would say is just don't go in with that rigid idea of, you know, this is what my methodology is going to look like. And this is how the process is going to go. In my experience, the best research comes out of those, you know, those really like eye-watering moments where you're like, what on earth am I doing? And and it's incredibly difficult. And then you've got to almost go back to the drawing board, and it is very iterative. So just throw yourself into that, expect that will happen. That is a normal part of any research process, and also just a really good learning experience too. And then secondly, as I've said, just be really willing to be open-minded and to, you know, when you're working with research partners and the different ex, because that for me, going in with that I've never worked with somebody in professional services before, you know, and just being open to listen to what Jenny's experiences were and seeing the way that she looks at higher education and from that different viewpoint, like I've learned so much from Jenny. And then sorry, just to go back, I was reflecting as you were talking, there was one other thing that I think I touched on, as I was saying that, you know, universities prepare students to become professionals. And again, for me, I think that the final thing that I wanted to say, the thing that I'll be taking forward, is as we prepare people to go into professional settings, like for me as a doctor now, so a part of, so the regulator, the GMC, they set us standards, and as part of that standards, one of them is teaching. So we must almost evidence that we're we're teaching, and this project and all the different student experiences that we've analysed. For me as a doctor now, I will go on and consider like the person that I'm teaching, whether it be at the bedside or in a classroom setting now, thinking about like, is what I'm saying and doing, is it working for everybody in the room? And I think you can often get really invested if you're busy, particularly if you are in a professional setting. And there were quotes about being on placement, weren't there? Like discussing this exact thing and just thinking about how can we make it more inclusive. And I was thinking about, you know, people who are graduating now as lawyers and the just all the different professional type of settings or teachers and thinking about how they can apply the lessons from this research in their different professional context. But yeah, I mean, I guess that was just one thing that I just quickly wanted to return to.
No, I love that. I'm glad you did.
Thank you. And then I think, yeah, as I say, just I was very lucky, and I'm not just saying this because you sat with me. You really were a wonderful person to work with, and I've learned so much from you. So I guess my two points are just be open to the experience, expect challenges, but I guess embrace them.
Yeah, and I think mine would be also be open minded to learning about each other's strengths. You know, without having a kind of preconceived idea, because obviously I was working with a student and then this student is coming to work with me as a member of professional services. Or like Mike said, he didn't really know what professional services was. And I've got all of these preconceived ideas about what a student can do or has done in their degree, when actually really I know nothing, you know, and we're each bringing ourselves and our own lived experience into this. So, you know, we did... Through working together, we did, you know, work out what each other's strengths were. And, you know, there were points at which Mike had a lot more, say, stamina for looking through data, for example, but also was quite time poor at times because he was studying. So we had different paces of work. So sure, I think that was, you know, that was also something to kind of get used to. But in terms of would I do anything differently? Well, obviously I would now because I've done that kind of research now. I'd plan it a lot better, I think, because now I've got the experience. But perhaps I would be more willing to reach out in advance to people that had more experience. Mm. Yeah. But I think for me, you don't know what you don't know, really. And I like to just start doing something and feel like I'm immersed in it before the next question arises. You know, so it's not necessarily the ideal way of doing it. But that can also be quite tricky when you're trying to work with another person. You're trying to lead them, but you're also kind of learning as you go. And I don't know whether you found that frustrating at all. But
no, not at all. I mean, Jenny, she raises like a really valuable point, particularly if you're working with students. So, you know, I'm a mature student as well, so I guess I think it's fair for me to say that like I bring a bit more life experience than when I was more willing to like, you know, I as you get older you develop better communication skills and emotional regulation when things get very stressful, and that's just something that comes with age. And I think Jenny raised a really good point that, you know, in particular, like, you know, going through medical school and the intense exams of that, she's absolutely fair to point out that at different points I was, you know, I had less to give. And I think that is something that my experience as a student in that situation, often it felt like that it was a disappointment for you and it was a disappointment for me. And I wished that I was able to give more, especially to a project that is so important. But no, I can't say that I ever felt frustrated with you.
Oh, good.
So, as I say, you were good. Yeah, you were great.
That's good.
I don't know about you, Hayley, but it almost feels like a shame to bring the episode to a close.
Yeah, yeah. Be nice to listen to this.
Well, I guess all that remains is to thank everyone for participating. Do read the article, sign up to the incubator launch event, and thanks once again, and see you all next time.
Thank you.